Welcome back to The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick. The Olympic flame isn't burning right now in Pyeongchang, South Korea, but competition isn't extinguished. The torch has been passed to the Paralympic Games, and they start tomorrow in Pyeongchang.
A lot of times how we've marketed and packaged the Paralympics are these kind of inspirational stories.
Amira Rose Davis is co-host of the Burn It All Down podcast, all about women in sports.
And sure, there's inspiration everywhere. There's inspiration in the Olympics, there's inspiration in the Paralympics. But these athletes are world-class elite athletes. They're more than just like really nicely packaged, feel-good stories, right? And so we've seen it captivate the nation before, especially in the Summer Games. And I think that we have the possibility to do that again if we remember that these are athletes and we love sports.
Davis is also assistant professor of history and women's gender and sexuality studies at Penn State University. She's back with us to talk about the Paralympics, and she starts with the athletes she's most excited to watch.
First, Oksana Masters, who's a fourth-time Paralympian, three-time medalist, and she actually competes in both the Summer and Winter Games. She was a rower. She won bronze back in 2012 in London. But after sustaining a lower back injury, she actually switched to skiing. So she'll be competing in cross-country skiing and biathlon. She's really fun to watch. Also, because the United States is now a curling country and we've fallen in love with curling, people will love to know that there is wheelchair curling featuring a returning Olympian, Penny Greenlee. And for me, really, though, snowboarding is where it's at. Brenna Huckabee, who is 22-year-old, she's competing in her first Olympic Games, but she's very decorated at the world level. She's won a few gold medals at the World Cup finals for para snowboarding. She recently made headlines. She became one of the first Paralympians to be included in Sports Illustrated's recent swimsuit issue. She said, quote, "I see it as an opportunity to inspire others. It's very rare, if ever, that you see a woman with disability pose in sexy swimsuits. I want to challenge the stigma behind disability. I want women to know that they are powerful." And I really like her. She also has a 17-month-old daughter, which is insane. So this is kind of like a Serena Williams situation. She was pregnant with her daughter as she was winning gold medals. And then on the men's side, you have the trio, the so-called Three Amigos, Evan Strong, Mike Shea, and Keith Gable. They swept the podium back in Sochi in 2014, and this was the first time that para snowboarding was included in the Winter Games. And in the years since, it has gotten a very popular and a lot of diversified competition from around the globe. And so they're facing stiffer competition, certainly, this year, but their relationship is really fun to behold. Shea had a quote where he said, "We're just a couple of guys having fun at U.S. Nationals, and now there's 70 athletes competing in the World Cups from all different nations, so it's become much bigger than I could ever imagine." So those are the people I have my eye on. I think it's going to be a great Paralympics.
So snowboarding, cross-country skiing, you mentioned it. The United States is now a gold medal curling country, so we're watching that at the Paralympic Games as well. It's big. How's the coverage, Amira, of the Paralympics Games now? You've covered it on your podcast, and we'll talk about that. What level has the coverage reached, and how are the networks, I guess in this case NBC, doing when they cover the Paralympic Games?
Yeah, I think this year we're going to see a increased coverage. Actually, I know that they're doubling their coverage from the last Winter Games. Coverage has been an issue. It's been an issue in the past, and it's been an issue that's pretty uniquely American in this regard. The United States lags behind. I think in Rio they did a study where the United States had maybe 6 hours of primetime Paralympic coverage compared to, say, 150 hours in Britain. And so there's definitely a kind of gap in coverage between the Olympic Games and the Paralympic Games. And I think this year NBC has definitely committed to increasing coverage. My co-host Jeff Luther had a great conversation with Lena Glaser, who is the producer for NBC around the Paralympics, and had a great conversation about the kind of difficulties and strategies and commitment now to producing a show about the Paralympics. And so I'm optimistic that we'll see more coverage. I think a lot of it is still going to be available via streaming, but it's something that we could vastly improve of in terms of our awareness of the games, the athletes competing, and just overall coverage and representation of people with disabilities.
We have a slice of that conversation that your co-host Jessica Luther had with Lena Glaser from NBC. Let's listen.
Education, honestly, is the most challenging thing. So I think the biggest thing for us is to sort of use our Olympic model, which is to really rely especially on our announcers, many of whom are Paralympic athletes. And so they can explain their sports better than anyone else can. And then also graphically, we've done a couple of things. We started this in Rio, and this will be our first Winter Games, partnering with a company called Lexi. They essentially create classification graphics, which are like animations that we can run at the beginning of Alpine events, at the beginning of a cross-country race, to kind of show you visually what the disabilities are of the people competing in this race, and essentially, why is it fair that these people would be competing against one another, which I think is the hardest thing to explain. So those have really helped a lot, which I think is good.
Amira, NBC seems to be taking seriously how it covers the Paralympic Games. What about sponsorships? What about getting the money in that can really drive more coverage? Let's face it, this is a business. They want to turn a profit when they cover a sporting event. So what is sponsorship like?
Yeah, precisely. And this has been a point of contention for years on the Paralympic side. Sponsorship, as you've pointed to, has lagged. Unlike the Olympics, however, Paralympians can have sponsorship more visible. So you can put it on jerseys. You can put it. They don't have the same rules governing the way that sponsors can come to the table to the Paralympics. We've seen an increase in commercials around this that have started through the Olympic Games that are going to continue to the Paralympic Games. But I think one of the big things about sponsorship, and we have to think about this over the last few decades, is that because sponsorship has lagged, it's also impacted the amount of financial support that Paralympians get themselves. So back in 2003, some former Paralympians actually filed a lawsuit against the USOC, the U.S. Olympic Committee, alleging that they underfund American Paralympians. And this included smaller healthcare benefits, smaller training stipends, smaller financial awards for winning medals. And the USOC basically confirmed that. And they basically were like, yeah, because we don't use government support to fund our athletes. Now, this is an age-old conversation about the United States kind of having a kind of free enterprise, free market philosophy around the Olympic athletes compared to other countries in which there's more federal support towards the Olympic movement itself. And one of the things that this has meant, though, is that the Paralympics have to have really rely on sponsorship to make up some of that funding, and that has been a very steep hill to climb. Back in Rio, Candace Cable, who is a multiple Paralympian medal winner, said, you know, that this is reflective of the lack of support that disabled people get more generally. It's always a day late and a dollar too short. So I think that there's still many strides to make when it comes to bringing sponsors to the table to help the U.S. Paralympic Committee.
Lena Glazer from NBC, in the conversation with your co-host, also mentioned sort of the difficulties for broadcasters in explaining and portraying the different levels of disability in the competition and why certain athletes would be competing against other athletes. You've talked about this in your podcast as well, and this goes to classification. Can you talk about that?
Yes. So classification is a concept that I've had to really study up on. And I think that it's something that is so important in the para games, because what happens is you have classifiers who are both technical, medical, and what they're doing is trying to figure out how to have fair and equitable competitions. And so how do you put groups together to compete in various sports when people are bringing to the table a whole range of disabilities? So the classification process, I talked a little bit with Dr. Jana Bellinger, who's here at Penn State with me in the Department of Kinesiology, and she works on disability awareness in sports and adaptive technology, and she kind of walked me through the process. She's actually a classifier for USA Para Track and Field, and she did it for the Rio Games. And so it's a process that goes hand in hand with qualification. You have to know what you're classified as, to know what times you need to meet to qualify for the games, what groups you're competing with. And these classifications can range from, in the Summer Games, for instance, if you take track and field, a classification could be, are you above the knee or below the knee amputee? For skiing sports, it could be, are you sitting? Are you standing up? But then they also get a lot more technical. And there's all these ways that the classifiers have of figuring out how you can group people with a variety of disabilities to have the most equitable race and take that off the table so then you can have – you just have elite athletes participating and trying to win in a fair way.
Amira, in that conversation you had with Jonna Bellinger there at Penn State, the issue of wheelchair athletes came up and classification there.
One of my biggest pet peeves is this term wheelchair bound. Mm-hmm. These athletes are not wheelchair bound. They move from a wheelchair to a sit ski to the floor to wherever. They're just people that move around and they use a different, you know, set of equipment. They have a C, you know, leg instead of running spikes. So they're using different equipment, but still the same level of sporting ability.
When you talk about classification in the para games and also terminology that gets used, these things are important.
Oh, yeah, they're very important. And I think language is so important here. And it's really also a time to talk about language and how we talk about people with disabilities in general. The para games give us an opportunity to really kind of critique and be self-reflective on how we're thinking about inclusion and representation. Many people look to these events to boost up ideas about disability rights awareness. And this is a really timely conversation as we see a surge in disability rights activism, especially around issues of healthcare and access to education and within politics sphere. And I think that getting language right at something like the Paralympic Games and understanding these kind of technical things and really getting this education when you have the platform like NBC and when you have this platform of the Olympic movement behind you can also be parlayed into society overall.
Amira Rose Davis, co-host of the Burn It All Down podcast, also assistant professor of history and women's gender and sexuality studies at Penn State University in State College, Pennsylvania. Professor Davis, it's been great having you. Thank you.
Thank you.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.